Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Youth sports is so foundational in reducing stress, reducing anxiety, teamwork, leadership, learning how to win, learning how to lose, all of those life skills that are going to help as we get on into college, on into our first jobs, on into relationships. Those are all foundational about sports and what we want to make our lifelong athletes.
That was Kirsten Jones on Psychologists Off the Clock.
We are four experts in psychology here to bring you cutting-edge and science-based ideas from psychology to help you flourish in your relationships, work, and health.
I'm Dr. Debbie Sorensen, a clinical psychologist practicing in Mile High, Denver, Colorado, and author of Act for Burnout, Act Daily Journal, and the Act Daily Card Deck.
From America's Heartland, I'm Dr. Emily Edlin, a clinical psychologist based in Chicago, Illinois, and author of Autonomy Supportive Parenting.
Calling in from Vienna, Austria, I'm Michael Herold, ACT coach, confidence trainer, and author of an upcoming book on being a better conversationalist and making friends.
And from coastal New England, I'm Dr. Jill Stoddard, author of Be Mighty, The Big Book of ACT Metaphors, and Imposter No More.
We hope you take what you learn here to build a rich and meaningful life.
Thank you for listening to Psychologists Off the Clock.
Hi, everyone. It's Emily, and I'm here with Jill today to talk about my interview with Kirsten Jones about a topic that I have been dying to talk about, which is youth sports. And I really wanted to cover this topic because I think in many ways, youth sports kind of represents the general tension of modern parenting right now. And for example, there are so many choices. There's such a diversity of athletic activities for kids to choose from. We know how beneficial sports are for kids and like what it does for them in the long term. There's a lot of hope, right, in having a child involved in sports. And Kirsten and I get into the why of this. Youth sports today is also more intense than ever. It's more competitive and high pressure, which we know can be risky for our kids' mental health and well-being. And, you know, in my own experience as a mother, Jill, I feel like I've really had to confront my own perfectionism on the sidelines. You know, it's hard to watch your child perform or not perform and still be available as a loving, supportive parent. So I think it's also the part of parenting that for me feels the hardest to practice what I preach about not getting so intensively involved, which I do share some of my struggles in this episode. And I did find that Kirsten really feels like a coach, you know, for parents too. So what did you think, Jill?
Well, I can relate to that so much. And I am not an athlete. I didn't grow up with competitive sports in my life. And yet, I also recognize that sports are really good for kids. And it's made me really want my kids to get into sports for those reasons. And we've tried a number of things and nothing has really stuck. And it really resonated with me when you and Kirsten were talking about the feeling that people have that their kid is getting started too late, that there's so much pressure in sports that the kids have to start when they're 3 years old and, you know, really get into it. And, you know, recognizing that that's problematic, but it also feels impossible to change. So, you know, my 9-year-old started baseball this year and he was very clearly the worst one on the team because he'd never played before. And all these other kids have been playing since they were 3 or 4 years old. And it was demoralizing for him. Like he really struggled with how bad that made him feel about himself. So it's just, I just recognize that feeling of stuckness. What's the answer? So do you just jump on the bandwagon and start your kids when they're 3 and all of the things, and then they're totally overscheduled and doing too much? Or do you say, no, I am not going to follow those rules that people have suddenly put in place, and I'm going to let my kid figure their thing out and not start until they're 10. But then they kind of run into this other issues. So I just, it very much resonated with me, the conflict, right? The desire to get the benefits of sports and this conflict with the pressure that has just arisen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really, like, as much as I have really aspired to find moderation, I think moderation is the key, right? Mm-hmm. But the culture of youth sports is not about moderation.
Totally.
And so it's really hard. It feels like swimming upstream culturally to raise kids how I would want to raise them with sports as more balanced and moderated. But you're right. Then they get behind and it's a reality.
Right.
So it feels very stuck.
It does. And then you see the same thing with the grownups in the room, right? Like the parents that are getting completely over-involved or making their whole entire lives about their kids' sports, right? Like you shouldn't miss your best friend's baby shower because your five-year-old has a hockey game.
Right.
And yet that happens.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of this like well-intentioned, almost like a pendulum has swung too far in the other direction from like Gen X to whatever gen we're in now, that I want to show up for my kids and support them and be at every game. And I think that's well-intentioned, but I think that that can be taken to an extreme where, you know, I'm not sure it's healthy to send a kid a message that your entire life, their sports is the center of your entire life.
Right.
Because I love the phrase Kirsten used a number of times, the ball is going to stop bouncing.
For everyone.
And she's, for everyone. She everyone. Was talking about it in reference to the kids.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, well, that's true of the parents too, who make their lives about their kids' sports. Like, just remember, the ball is going to stop bouncing. Most of them are not going to be professional athletes. And then what's going to happen to you and your life and your identity if you don't have anything else going on? And so Kirsten was making that point about the kids and the importance of having a variety of interests, hobbies, activities. And it just struck me like, I think the parents need that message too.
Yeah. And Kirsten and I get into a conversation about pressure versus support and how to make that distinction. Clearly, pressure is a more negative experience for the kid. And we know actually leads to worse outcomes. Higher pressure means worse performance. So we really want to be aiming for support. But I think what you just brought up is a very insidious pressure that we don't realize may be happening when we're being so involved and available and present, but making sports so center in our family life is pressure, because then our child is getting the message that they are important and worthy of attention because of the sport they're playing.
Right.
And we just have to be so careful that we're separating out how we're communicating their worth as a person.
Yeah, it hadn't really occurred to me that you missing your best friend's baby shower to attend your kid's practice may not be seen as, oh, look how supportive my parents are. It might be, oh my gosh, this is a lot of pressure. They're missing this really important event to be at my game. Yikes. That it could be internalized as pressure instead of support.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is a huge ball of wax, this youth sports thing, but I'm really excited we had Kirsten on to give us parents some good tips and guidance, help kind of bring us back down to earth, and just some help with this part of raising kids.
I agree. It was a great interview and a really interesting topic.
Yeah. Thanks, Jill. I hope everyone else enjoys it. Kirsten Jones, peak performance and sports parenting coach, is a co-host of the hashtag Raising Athletes podcast and a motivational speaker. Kirsten is not only a Hall of Famer D1 volleyball player from William & Mary, but she was a Nike executive for 15 years. Kirsten and her husband are raising three athletes themselves, ages 23, 20, and 17, in Los Angeles. Her boys are both D1 basketball players, and her daughter plays high school volleyball. Kirsten also coaches club volleyball and enjoys traveling anytime she gets the chance. Her first parenting book, Raising Empowered Athletes, a youth sports parenting guide for raising happy, brave, and resilient kids, launched August 8th last year. Welcome, Kirsten.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, we've been planning this for a while, and I've been so excited because youth sports is one of my favorite hot topics as a parenting person. So I want to start with the truth bomb for all the listeners out there. Most of us are not parenting elite athletes, right?
Right. Oh, 100%. In fact, 99.99999% of us are not future pro athletes.
Right. And you get into the statistics and the chances and why that should not be driving us in our parenting. However, there's an intensity to youth sports these days, and we'll get into that. But I want to acknowledge for listeners that we're going to be all over the continuum, right, of where we are in terms of parenting and youth sports. I mean, we have our little itty bitty kids just learning to throw a ball or do a somersault, right? And then the elementary kids who, honestly, I think are under too much pressure these days to really focus and specialize in sports. And then we get into the tweens and teens where it really amps up in intensity. So I just want to acknowledge that we could be all over this continuum right now. And you specialize in working with youth who are more serious athletes. But I will say that I believe your messaging throughout this book and on your platform is really relevant for parents, caregivers, and coaches of kids all across this athletic continuum.
Thank you.
As an example,
that was the goal.
Good. Well, I'm going to share your mission statement to set the stage, and then we'll get into the big questions. All right. So you say, this is about raising kids who, regardless of how high they climb on the athletic ladder, might become kind, compassionate, confident, well-focused young adults who passionately pursue their goals. Sometimes they will succeed. Sometimes they will fail. But my hope is that we raise young people gritty enough that when they do fall down, they dust themselves off and begin anew. Very nicely said.
Thank you. And as a fellow author, when I went to pitch the book, what I got mostly back in the no thank you was people thought I was trying to write a book about raising a pro athlete or raising a D1 athlete. And they were like, yeah, well, that's not really that important. And in fact, when I said, no, you want to put this up against other parenting books about raising good kids, because take out athlete, put in scientist, take out athlete, put in artist, take out athlete, put in whatever it is your child is into. It's the same principles. It's the same structures. It's the same, you know, wins and losses, things going well, things not going well, that we want. That's how we learn as humans, and using sports as a metaphor for life that, you know, you'll apply in different ways as you get older.
Absolutely. I love that so much. So we are talking about sports and athletes, however. So let's start with the good stuff. You know, what are the benefits of kids participating in sports?
Youth sports is so foundational in reducing stress, reducing anxiety, teamwork, leadership, learning how to win, learning how to lose. You know, what we see is understanding who we are by maybe being the starter one time, maybe riding the bench the next time, maybe getting cut one time, maybe being able to grow and develop other players. All of those life skills that are going to help as we get on into college, on into our first jobs, on into relationships. Those are all foundational about sports. And what we want to make are lifelong athletes. Not all of us are competitive. Not everybody wants to, you know, stand on a podium. There are many, many, many activities in life that don't require us going for a ribbon or a trophy that will make us better human beings, surfing or rock climbing or, you know, hiking, biking, all of those kind of things. I include cast a very wide net in when we look at youth sports. We want active children.
Right. So in your role as a peak performance coach and mom of competitive athletes, what do you see as the biggest pitfalls of our modern day youth sports culture?
Because and as a former athlete myself, I'm really competitive, and I'll admit it. I'll be the first one that, okay, well, I believe we write the book we needed to read, right? So while I don't have any stories of me losing my mind on the sidelines, that doesn't mean that I don't feel that gut punch when your kid doesn't play, when your kid gets cut, when your kid, they lose, when the coach yells at them, like all of those things that we watch our kids experience. But understanding how we can help them navigate all of that and grow from that is what this is about.
I love that you bring up those examples and that you put yourself in this group, right? Of how hard it is to tolerate watching our kid not get playing time or not make the team they were shooting for. I'll share. So my youngest just started club soccer, which I had very mixed feelings about, but he was very excited about it. But leading up to the actual tryouts, I could not believe how nervous I was. I mean, my whole body was tense. I was ruminating about it. I am like, at the time he was eight, I'm like, he is an eight-year-old playing soccer. Just chill out.
Stop why trying to make the national team, right?
No. Why do you think we get so, just this visceral response and that just feels so intense?
I was just having this discussion with a friend because I think one of the things that's happened over time is where our parents would open the back door and we would run out and play until the lights went off. No parent was involved. Nobody kept score. I mean, unless you wanted to, there were no trophies. Like, we were just allowed to play for the sake of playing, and we learned through that playing. And now, as I talk about in the beginning of the book, what happened in the 50s and 60s when only less than 25% of women worked outside of the home. Now you get into the 70s and 80s, which is, I was a child in the 70s and 80s, that number had doubled. So now you have two parents working, or half of them had two parents working. Now today we're almost all, 78% of women work outside of the home. So you have more money, but you have less time. Then, in 1979, ESPN comes online. So now I can turn on the TV and I can see sports 24. Oh, Tiger Woods, and he's two, and he's putting on Johnny Carson. Ooh, and I can see Andre Agassi, and ooh, he's 10,000 hours. He's been playing a lot of tennis and he's really good. And then you add this, well, gosh, dads aren't getting to spend enough time, particularly dads, and I want to throw them all under the bus, but, dads aren't getting as much time. I'll just coach Johnny. Well, I'll be the coach of the baseball team and I'll get involved, which I think came from a completely good place. Like, okay, yes, we want to help our kids grow. We get to spend more time with them. But then what started happening is, well, if we got Timmy and Johnny and, Rex on the team too, then we could be even better. So we started controlling how our kids did sports. Whereas in the 70s and 80s, you played YMCA or maybe AYSO, and when it was over, and you went from season to season. Now we parents are so invested, and honestly, that's why I wrote the book, was when I got pregnant, every mom handed me what to expect when I was expecting, when you're expecting, and you think, oh, I'm going to be the best parent ever. I can read this cover to cover. I know exactly what's going on every single week. I read it three times. Every single pregnancy, I read it, and I felt so good about my future parenting self. And then I got to Kick and Chase, and my kid is four, and you have somebody standing next to you go, not doing this rec thing, right? Like, we're doing club, and we've got a coach, and when we're going to go overseas this summer, and all of a sudden, you start feeling FOMO. You start feeling like, ooh, I'm a bad, wait, they're doing that? Oh, I'm not doing that? Is my child going to be behind? So that's happening at five and six and eight now. That never happened a generation ago.
Right. And I mean, we see that paralleling with academics, this whole keeping up with the peer group and the community standards, and all of those metrics keep sort of increasing in terms of the bar gets higher and higher. And we're all sort of sucked into this vortex of comparison and competition.
Yes. And what is it doing to our kids and to ourselves is feeling lack. I feel like I don't have any control. And now I love Jennifer Wallace's new book, Never Enough, too, where she talks about mattering. Yeah. And kids don't feel like they matter because all of my value is based on what team I got on, what trophy I won, what school I got into, what my GPA is. Those are all things that are outside of who they are. Whereas in our generation, I walked the dog, I fed the horses, I mowed the lawn, I had chores, I had responsibilities, and regardless of whether I won the softball game or not, I still mattered because I was still a part of this family and I had a role within the family. Well, now we don't have time for that. Like you got practice till 10 o'clock at night. You got to be up at 5 for practice tomorrow morning. You've got the big test tomorrow. So you don't have to do homework or you don't have to do chores. You don't have to clean the dishes. You don't have to do anything extra because we parents are trying to take things off of their plate so they can focus on the things that we think that matter.
Yes. And as a psychologist, what I really struggle with are these times, how late practices go, how early they start, how many hours a week kids are putting into sports. Just from like a zoomed out perspective, that is compromising their sleep and their stress levels and just contributes to that go, go, go mentality and culture that is not good for any of us.
Grade schoolers need 8 to 10 hours of sleep. Middle school or high schoolers need, you know, at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep. I know we lived in Buffalo for a little while and the kindergartners or first graders would get on the ice at 10 o'clock at night. Like it's crazy. That was the only time they could get ice time. Like
ridiculous.
That's absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, and we're going to Canada next week because there's a big tournament because we don't have enough 5-year-olds here in, you know, in the local village to play hockey. I mean, that's how crazy it's gotten and how escalated it's gotten to the point that we've kind of lost the plot on, again, what are they eating? When are they sleeping? What are the priorities around family? Do we even have, my family doesn't have vacation anymore because Christmas is, you know, basketball season, right? So you don't have Christmas together. You get 48 hours together and you call that Christmas. You know, you're lucky if in the summer you can cobble together, you know, only ticking off one or two coaches by going on a whole week vacation, right? We're losing that sense of, you know, my father always said, you know, the only thing you get from your childhood are your memories. Like you can buy them all the gifts you want and you can go on the fancy vacations, but the things that they're going to remember, it's not that 332nd soccer tournament in the middle of July, but when we camped out in grandma's backyard for that week, remember? And then we were really, you know, those are the stories that they're going to tell later on.
Yeah. And think about all the relationship building that gets lost too with that. In terms of that real downtime together as a family, as kids are growing up and changing. And just tonight, I'm facing going to my oldest incoming high schooler's night. I can't believe she's about to start high school. It's a reminder. I know it doesn't feel this way when your kids are 3 and 4. It does speed up and it starts to go so fast. And I know we've become a lot more cognizant of we want to have family time together before it all changes. So we have a lot of tension here between this love of sports. I mean, we especially, I know this is true around the world. America loves its sports, right? And we love competition. And there's this glory, right, to having an athletic kid. And I don't know, I think it gets tied up in status too.
100%. No, it's the college cheating scandal to me is there are two sides of the same coin, right? Which is the parenting ego gets caught up in what award, what school, what college, what is my kid going to? And not that, you know, maybe junior really shouldn't go to college and, or she shouldn't go to, you know, XYZ college that really, you know, she would be just as happy going to a trade school. And I think there's a huge reality check that needs to come with that too. And assessing why are we, you know, and again, there are so many benefits to sports, but we don't want it to be to the demise and to the, you know, to the lack of them having a childhood.
Right. Okay. I think we have established that youth sports is a problem as a whole. The great part is you wrote a book about what
all
we can do.
All the answers.
That's all the answers.
I wish.
Well, I will say in all seriousness, it's a fabulous guide, you know, to navigating the nitty gritty of parenting any level of athlete, whether that's your 5-year-old or your 20-year-old. So let's start with one of my favorite sections of the book. it's near and dear to my heart, is this distinction between pressure and support. So you already mentioned this, but what is part of this is this danger of sending this message of conditional love when we get too wrapped up in our kids' performance. So you shared an example of a father who stops coming to his son's basketball games because his son was not getting playing time. And you warn, and I mean, this was so painful for me to read, and you warn, this conveys, quote, "My love for you is conditional. I will only support you when you soar, not when you struggle." And I think this is really important for parents to hear.
And I get it. It's a true story. And I get it because I'm a competitive person. So it's very hard. And when I flew to Kansas City with my daughter and she was the only one of the 14 girls to never touch the floor for 3 full days, I can't say, oh, that's okay. You know, the team lost every game and I don't care that she touched the floor. No, I do care. And it was painful, not to mention my time and resources and everything that went into that. But we also have to evaluate, what are we doing to our child in how they're perceiving, you know, it's their sport. So checking in with them, gosh, is it important to you that I'm there? Some kids will be like, nah, I don't care. and that's fine. And other kids will be like, no, gosh, I really love it when you're there and you're cheering me on and it's really important. So knowing your kid and knowing yourself. And maybe if you're super competitive and it's really hard that they're not starting or getting as much playing time, I mean, my saying is take a lap. And that's what I have to do. Like, oh, gee, look it, I got to go to the bathroom again. But get yourself away from it, you know, and don't allow your child to see you. And please, for heaven forbid, don't be yelling at your kid or at the other kids and all the negative stuff that's going on at the coaches. I see kids all the time. In fact, this same young boy, every time he'd make a mistake, he'd be, you know, his head was on a swivel looking to his dad when he was there, not to the coach.
Right.
Because his dad had trained him that I'm the only voice that matters.
So how would you distinguish, help all of us distinguish pressure versus support? So give an example of what each one might look like from the sidelines.
So pressure is a client that I have right now that she's a very good soccer player. She's getting recruited high major D1, mid-major to high major D1. She's a very good soccer player. She loves soccer. When you talk to her about soccer, her eyes light up. Yet she came to me because she's actually throwing up on the sidelines before her games and she can't figure out why. She's like, I don't know. I really love this. I'm not sure why I like literally feel nauseous. So we start unpacking why that might be happening. And she goes, I don't know. Like sometimes my dad texts me during the games. And I said, text you during the games? How does that work? You're on the soccer pitch. She's like, well, you know, we have timeout and I'll go over and he'll be. And so she said, I'll pretend like I'm getting my water out and I'll open my bag and I'll look at my phone and he'll, and I'll say, what does he say? She said, well, sometimes it's positive, but sometimes it's, why did I even bother coming?
Wow. So that's pressure.
That's pressure, right?
Yeah.
And then to wonder why your kids, and I don't think he's a horrible person. I don't think he's a bad guy. If that's you, don't, it's isn't about shaming anyone. We all do things that we're not proud of as parents, but it is being able to see, separate yourself from your child and seeing what you're doing to her in that moment of you feeling the anxiousness. Text your wife, text your best friend,
right?
Go talk to somebody else. Do not text your child about their game during their game or even after their game, right?
So my 12-year-old does competitive gymnastics and they did this Positive Coaching Alliance event where we came and this woman from the organization spoke with the parents. She also had separate times with the teams and the coaches. And in our time together, she showed this video and it was so moving. And especially as a child psychologist myself, I was in tears because I can really feel kids' feelings. And they were saying, when you tell me from the sidelines, do your best or work hard, they said, I know that. Like, I'm not, why else would I be out there? Whatever I'm doing right then is my best.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help for you to say that to me from the sidelines.
We all know there are trade-offs in life, like having to drive a little further to save on gas or groceries. But when it comes to your health, you shouldn't have to trade off. So don't go back to that one doctor who's always late and rushes through your appointment just because they're close by or they take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, insurance, literally no trade-offs here because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. My kid's pediatrician is retiring this summer, so you can bet I will be using ZocDoc to find someone new who we all love and trust. So go to ZocDoc.com/POTC and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/POTC. ZocDoc.com/POTC.
Small behaviors can make a big difference in our health and well-being. Most of us work so many hours each week that we should think about how our work habits affect our bodies. Being able to stand sometimes while I work has made a huge difference for me. Uplift Desks has created high-quality office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. My Uplift standing desk allows me to easily transition from sitting to standing while I work with just the push of a button. I feel so much better than when I sit all day, and it helps me recharge to change positions when I get tired in the afternoon. In addition to standing desks, Uplift offers ergonomic office seating, storage systems, even walking treadmills for your desk. You can get free shipping with no hassles, free 30-day returns and return shipping, and a 15-year warranty. Remember, by supporting our sponsors, you're supporting the podcast. Visit UpliftDesk.com/POTC for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/POTC to get 5% off your entire order.
There's a great meme that I came across that the mom is in the kitchen cooking eggs for breakfast, and the son comes in and says, "Mom, the eggs are going to burn." She says, no, I got it." She says, "Mom, you got to flip the eggs." No, I got it." She says, "Mom, the eggs, I'm not going to be able to eat them." She's like, "Why are you bothering me like this while I cook the eggs?" He goes, "Do you remember what happened to my soccer game yesterday?"
Yep. Yeah. How do we feel if our performance is being narrated?
Live streamed. Yeah. You're not going to do it. You're
exactly.
Going to get it. You're not doing it. You're not working hard enough. Yeah. And exactly to that point, I don't think anybody's like, "Ooh, let me try to screw up." Right. So
right.
You narrating it while I'm trying to do my best is not helpful.
No. And that's another form of pressure, right? Okay. So let's move to support. Give us some tips, Kirsten. Help us. How do we support instead of pressure our athletes?
Support looks like questions, right? And asking good questions. And I say have 91-minute conversations with your child, as I'm sure you talk about with your clients as well, instead of one 90-minute conversation. That means our kids don't know what they want for dinner that night or what kind of flavor of ice cream they want. They can't possibly know if in 3 months they still want to do karate or play baseball or do hockey. So yeah, but you said you liked this 3 years ago. Come on, why don't you still like it? Like us always putting this expectation on they should know what they want when, you know, again, we change our minds daily as well, allowing them to change their minds, which means like checking in. Gosh, that looked like you had a lot of fun today. How did it feel to you? That's support. Asking good questions. Mm-hmm. Do you want to share? Do you want to talk about it? The car ride home is, you know, mm-hmm. the most infamous one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the time to talk about the ref or the coach or the dumb substitution that made or that kid is, please don't ever shame another child, right?
Yep.
Because what your child is hearing is, oh, that child's not good enough. There's going to be a time when I'm not good enough and they're going to replace their name for their own.
Yeah.
So if you have to, again, turn on the music, stop for yogurt, whatever you need to do. And I like to say the next day, you know, and you'll know your kid. Some kids will be, they want your opinion. Or if you've played, perhaps they'll want to understand what you thought of the game. That's fine. But you don't need to break down just like your day. You don't need to, I sent this email and then I had this meeting and like, you know, it was a good day. Like, oh, great. You want to talk about it? I'm good. I had,
right.
Some challenges, but I got through it.
So not imposing our own agenda, right?
Exactly.
Onto the conversation. One other tip I got from that Positive Coaching Alliance event that I loved was asking your child before it happens, say, when you have a tough outing, or, you know, you're disappointed in your performance, or you lost the game, or whatever the tough outing equivalent is for your child, what do you want from me? And having them think about that before it's actually that moment. And when I asked my daughter, because gymnastics is tough, like every meet is different, and it does not matter how you did at the other meet, you do not know where you're going to end up with a medal or not, right? And what your scores are going to be. It's very metric oriented. And so I asked my daughter what she would want. She surprised me. She said, I want you to focus on what went well. I thought she would say, I don't want you to talk to me about it at all. But she said, I want you to like remind me what parts went well and what I did well. And that was really helpful. And I wouldn't have guessed that.
And they may change their mind. Some days they may want to hear that. And other days she may say, I don't want, but you told me I could get no. Right?
We had a contract.
Yeah, exactly. So they reserve the right to say, not today, Mom, right?
Yeah.
So that's the other part, is being flexible in, and I love the question before, because then you can, you have the experience and then you try it and they're like, you know what? I don't want you reminding me of what, like they can process it and then realize, oh, in fact, I actually don't like the positive reiteration. I just want to be mad. So just, can you give me space?
Well, and hopefully the message is, I want to do for you what you want, not what I want in this
Exactly. Because it's not about me. This is about you and helping you process it.
There are a few other tips from your book I wanted to make sure we get out there. And one of them is one I was already doing, so I was very proud of myself. But this is what you say. The only six words you should say to your child are, I love to watch you play.
Yeah. Again, we like to think it's about us. And what I have seen is, I live in Los Angeles, and so there's a lot of pro athletes here. And honestly, almost to a person, the higher the person played in sports, the more laid back they are as a parent.
Really? Oh, that's really so interesting.
Because they know how hard it is, and they know how motivated they had to be in order to get to that level. And if it was their parent that motivated them, they would have never reached that level.
Yeah.
It's, you never like, oh, wow, I want to thank my parents for getting this gold medal because the only reason I ever trained hard was because of them. No, it has to be intrinsically driven.
Yeah.
At least to some degree.
Yeah.
Or they're not going to want to stick with it.
I think that's a huge point from your book to really pull out. The internal motivation is key.
Huge.
To enjoyment, to performance, right? To sticking with it. So how do parents support that internal motivation, do you think?
Well, and I think it is a tricky one to, you know, the earlier point, they change their mind. They don't know. They're only eight. So I think it starts by sampling and by trying as many things as possible in sports and out of sports, doing art, doing music, doing reading, doing science, like sampling a lot of different things. And hopefully, if you're lucky, all the way up until high school, you should be able to do multiple things. No, you can't play three club sports year round. No, it won't work. I'm not delusional, but you should be able to sample. Okay. Her real passion is soccer, but she also wants to be in the school play. Okay. She can't be the lead of the school play, but she could have a supporting role. I would say for as long as you can, allow them to sample in different ways, because ultimately, probably all of that will one day, I say, the ball stops bouncing for us all at some point, right?
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Right? There's an end point for everyone
there
here.
There's an end point, right? But, and like my daughter who did the school play in third, fourth, and fifth grade, she thinks she wants to go into screenwriting now. The volleyball is stopping bouncing for her at the end of this club season. But she said to me the other day, I think I might want to take acting lessons. Like, so the penny was planted, or the seed was planted 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, she did a couple little school plays, but she sampled it enough to say, gosh, that might be an itch I want to scratch, which is what you're trying to do.
Well, and what I really like about this, and this is consistent with other podcast episodes we've had, really talking about finding our own sense of self and sense of worth and value in the world. And a huge part of that is having different identities. If we are too invested in one identity and only putting our resources into that one identity, that creates so much more pressure to always be excelling there. If you have these other, if you have, well, I have my theater class and my music and art, you're not putting so much pressure on just one thing. So then if you have a tough game, it's not as devastating.
Yeah, I speak about it in the book too. I think we've become a consumption. We consume society, right? Versus create. Mm-hmm. And we as humans are better when we're creating podcasts, when we're creating TikToks, when we're, I mean, even something as like, oh yeah, video games, but at least if they're having to use their, you know, oh, what am I going to do? And how long is it going to go for? And it's allowing them to step outside of that, go to the practice, do what the coach says. You know, now again, sports has become so rote. You actually don't get better doing the club sport. If you want to get better at the sport, you got to pay somebody to have actual coaching.
Yeah. Like private coaching.
Private coaching, because yeah, the club sport really is only about the team.
Yeah.
And really ends up ultimately focusing on the best players because the coach needs to win. So practice ends up being, how can the coach support the best athletes on the team to get the result that they're looking for? And if you happen to have just skated in and you're on the top bottom third, you're not really going to be developed for most, you know, what I've found and through my, raising my three kids, that's not about development. So to your point, which I love, like both of my boys now play guitar. And it's this huge outlet, you know, in college and now in grad school, like it's a huge outlet for them because, yeah, life is not all about basketball. And yes, the ball's going to stop bouncing, but look, I can do this. And one of them just started singing, and actually he's playing in college, and he said on the bus ride home from, they just played at Bucknell, and the head coach came back and he said, I want to hear your beats. And then he's like, aww, is that you singing? I can't believe you're actually singing. Like, so here he was like growing a little piece of confidence in himself that had nothing to do with him being a basketball player.
Right. So when basketball stops, he has confidence elsewhere. It's not his defining.
Yeah, I tried that and that kind of grew into something. And my oldest one during COVID, he ended up picking up surfing. And what's funny was we had lived in San Diego when he was 10 and I made us do a family surf camp and it was a disaster because I'm 6 feet tall and had never surfed. My husband needed a hip replacement. He had never surfed. Like we barely got up on the boards, but I have one little picture of my oldest CJ getting up on the surfboard at 10. And at 20, when he goes into COVID, he starts surfing again. And I overhear him talking to people. He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I surfed as a kid, you know, so.
This one time.
but that's what they don't remember, right? So again, parents, they don't have to get ranked. They don't have to get whatever, win the pottery contest or be the best at anything, but just exposing them to a different language or a different musical instrument or a different theater production or those kind of things can become seeds that I think over time become something that they're like, oh, okay, I think I'm done with water polo, but gosh, I remember I really loved, you know, playing the violin. Maybe I want to pick that back up again.
Well, and I think this line of thinking is really a good reminder for parenting as well, in the sense of us being so focused on their baseball or tennis or whatever sport. Let's focus more broadly ourselves on what we're giving attention to. I mean, kids are really intuitive. And when they know that all we talk to them about is how they're doing at practice or their games or what's happening with your coach, but we're not asking questions about anything else of interest to them, they're getting a message.
One of the best podcasts, it was one of the first ones I've done, but I had a 5-time Olympian on, Danielle Scott, and was now a mom at this time. The daughter was 8. And she made it 5 times in volleyball. And then after not playing basketball since college, went back and made the national team for basketball. Like, wow. Had this ridiculous growth mindset. And when I'm talking to her about her daughter, she's like, well, we're learning how to play the piano. She said, I'm horrible. She's actually pretty good. So she's teaching me a lot. My 8-year-old. So we're doing, duets together on the piano, and I'm learning so much from her. So here's this Olympian who could have this ego about needing to be the best because she has been, yet she has this growth mindset of, So I like to say to parents, what are, you know, here's a brand new year. What are you going to try this year? And again, you don't need to become a Michelin star chef. You don't need to open a bakery. You don't need to whatever, speak the language fluently, but pick something that you can show. They're not going to listen to 90% of what we say, but they're watching everything that we do.
Yeah.
And if they see you trying and failing or taking a swing and, oh, wow, that didn't go as well as I thought. Gosh, mom, that reminds me of the art project that I got the D on or whatever, right? Like, that gives them permission to also not feel the pressure, to not be perfect, to not nail it every time.
Yeah. And I am seeing that in this generation of kids right now is this aversion to doing something that they're not good at. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense because how can you be good at it if you've never done it? You have to start with discomfort and feeling like you don't know how to do something. So I think you're right. Parents need to be modeling that it's okay to be uncomfortable and unsure of yourself and not have it nailed. You're not supposed to. That's the whole point, right?
Competence builds confidence.
Yes.
And you can't have competence. I mean, like, again, the analogy of like, so when your child started to try to walk and they didn't, you didn't be like, well, that's not going to work. So I guess we'll just move on, right? Like, we stuck with it. They stuck with it.
Right.
Same applies for whatever it is that they're trying. And we need to be doing that as well. And it's really easy as an adult. Well, you know, at my age, I can't do anything new. Well, the woman who wrote one of the best books last year, she's 64.
Bonnie Garmus is Lessons in Chemistry.
Yes. Right. Yes. Like she's 64.
Right.
First book ever. Right. And we say, oh, I'm 50. I could never write a book or whatever. I'm whatever age. I'm whatever. Didn't have this education. Don't have that degree. We start labeling ourselves about what is or isn't possible. Those limiting beliefs seep through.
Yeah. So I think a really hot topic in youth sports and parenting, and we've sort of been touching on like the ball stops bouncing at some point, is when to quit. And you have a whole chapter, Play or Pivot, and you share examples of teens that you meet who are clearly only continuing a sport to please their parents. And it really broke my heart hearing some of these stories. So how would you counsel parents to avoid this where the child's only playing to please their parents?
You know, there will be signs that it's not their thing. They'll be injured more often. They'll be sick more often. They will find ways to we subconsciously do this to deep six ourselves so that we don't have to fail or we don't have to upset our parents. And, you know, the one example I gave, which was, you know, one of my clients who's a baseball player and he told his mom at 8, he wanted to play for UCLA. And she was honestly the kindest one, most wonderful woman, only wanted to support that dream. Well, at 15, 16, he realized, you know, I'm only throwing 92. I'm not throwing 95. Like he realized, I don't have what it takes to get there. And she was like, no, we can still make it work. And at some point he had started to pivot.
Yeah.
And she was still holding on to it.
Right.
And I don't think any ill will, but parents, you need to hear what your kid is saying. Like, gosh, mom, I don't think this is for me. He ended up going to college and not playing at all. He could have played, but I think he had lost the love a couple years before. And she just kind of couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, I am going to surprise you with something. When I was on your podcast, you put me in a role play situation.
Okay.
<Uh-oh>. So now I'm going to get you back.
I love it.
So I'm going to present a recent dilemma from my family, and you can be Coach Kirsten. And I am sharing this with my daughter's permission. I asked her specifically. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I hope I handle it the right way.
This is called pressure. No, I'm supporting you in sharing your wisdom in this experiential way.
Yes.
Okay.
No,
I trust
this
in you.
I love this.
Okay. So as I mentioned, I have a 12-year-old gymnast, and she's obviously more than a gymnast, but she does gymnastics.
Yeah.
And she is in her third year of competitive. She started around age 7. So she's been doing gymnastics as a whole for about 5 years. It's her third year of competition. And this is minor. Well, it's sort of interesting. She's not in the Olympic track gymnastics. There's a different, like, lower competition level. That's about half the practice hours. But she still practices 9 hours a week. And in the winter, it's meets like once a month. She has about 5 or 6 meets in a season. And those are long days. Okay. So she's in competitive gymnastics. She had a coaching change. And the new coach feels like a bully. And I have seen my daughter's whole demeanor change, and she's starting to not want to go to practice. She gets stressed about facing her coach. She shares things that are concerning, like things the coach seems to be more into pressure and using negative tactics to motivate the children rather than positive support. And I have found myself balancing this tension between wanting to protect her and not overly involving myself, because that's my own lane that I want to be careful about. I don't want to overreact, for one thing, right? But I also don't want to underreact and not protect her if she needs protection. So just to give a little, I have given direct feedback to the coach that the style is not working. The coach does not seem open to my feedback. And now she's ready to quit the whole thing. My daughter, you know, she's said, I've lost the love. I mean, she just doesn't approach it in the same way because of this experience. So here's my dilemma. The coaching, I think, is harmful to my child. It seems to be causing actual stress and anxiety, and it's ruining the joy and love of the sport. And this coaching situation is temporary. I won't get into the reasons. So I worry about her regretting stopping because, you know, what if, right? In a better situation, she regains her love. So I want to hear, what would you counsel me?
Yeah, first of all, I'm so sorry. Ironically, or maybe not anymore, I've been there. And my son completely stopped playing soccer because of it and never, ever touched a soccer ball again. And the only comfort that I had was that he had another sport.
Yeah.
But if this is her passion, and if it takes her away from doing something that's the things we spoke about at the beginning are good for her body or good for her mind or good for her friendships and all of that, that's demoralizing. And also, as a parent, very maddening, right?
And yeah,
what we know is hurt people, right?
Yeah.
And getting her to advocate for herself, which I'm guessing you encouraged.
Yep.
And how did that go?
So it was interesting. Her and her sweet little friend were talking to me one day, and I was like, what if, like, they have a group of like four friends on the team. I said, what if all of you approached her together rather than just one of you, mm-hmm. and say, yelling at us is not helping us. And they had a whole plan. They were all in, and they wanted me to pick them up early from practice. So I was there when they talked to her, like, you know, physically present. So I went and I was there. And then my daughter rushed up to me and she said, we couldn't do it. It's too scary. I'm like, I get it. So there's a tension there too. I don't want to push her into an actual, like, more harmful situation.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess the only thing, if she was going to go alone, would not be to say, look, you're bullying me, but rather, could I understand, you know, I'm curious as to why you have, you know, you're coaching me the way you are. What I'm used to is X. What I'm feeling is Y. And of course, as you know, and we adults know that some parents will be, or some coaches will be like, I don't care. Like, this is my style. Like it or lump it.
Yeah.
And go ahead and leave if you don't like it. And that's then part of the choice that at least she's gone and advocated for herself, which what I like to say with youth sports is a lot of this, when parents come to me and are devastated for things like this, and I know this isn't why you signed up for the sport, but it might be one of the best gifts that they get, in that they will have recall of that moment of going in and standing up and saying, gosh, I am worthy of asking for respect.
Yeah.
And they will do it again with the teacher or with the next coach or with the relationship or with the friend. You're helping them model the right way to handle adversity.
And that their well-being is of the utmost importance.
Absolutely.
And I think I've been very cognizant of that message, because one reason I wanted to bring this up too was to share my own, like, emotional response as a parent that I think is really common, where we have invested a lot of time and money and energy. And then when your child says, I don't want to do it anymore, it does feel like a loss for us too, to manage. And well, it then makes it harder to stay focused on what's best for our child if we're not aware of that emotional response we're having.
Yes. And we want them to feel seen.
Yeah. Right.
That my mom has my best input in regardless. And it's, this is not about you getting on the podium. This is not about you getting on a higher team, but you are enough just as you are. And you deserve to be pushed. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But in a way that's going to be nurturing and
building you up instead of tearing you down.
Yeah. And I played for two coaches that tore me down like that. Mm-hmm. And again, I wrote about it in the book and got bullied by some girls in high school. And I think it's why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And we've talked about, you know, you're learning what kind of coach you want and you don't want. You know, this whole experience is not for nothing.
And then I had that kind of boss at Nike too, by the way. And I saw her coming, and she wasn't supportive of other women, and she didn't like that I had kids and was able to juggle it all. And so she wanted nothing to do with me. And it was, I think, having some of those mean girl relationships, mm-hmm. though, that I realized, wow, I want to support other women.
Yeah.
And I do not have time for mean girls. And so I don't have mean girls in my life. They come into my life and I watch them go by.
Yeah. Do not engage. Right.
Do not engage.
Yeah.
But it took me
patterns
dozens
of going
of
through
years
it.
Of going through it. And I kept meeting that same woman who kept saying, you're not enough. Who do you think you are? You know, and now again, being an entrepreneur, there's nothing more vulnerable than saying, here I am. What do you think?
And, I know. Yeah.
Right? And saying, am I enough?
Right.
And what I've come to is, I'm not for everybody. And that's okay. And if I'm not serving you, click away. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we want our daughters to do too. And our sons to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I'm so sorry that coach didn't see you for who you were. And you're going to have other coaches and other teachers and other relationships
right.
where you are going to feel seen and heard, and that will make all the difference.
Yeah. And this was a real test for me to, you know, walk the talk here of showing her.
Don't you hate it when that happens? Yeah. It's like I had to learn every lesson in the book. Like, you know, it's like, I just want to write about getting cut and write about mean girls and write. No, like you need to experience all of them.
Yeah.
And when you experience them, you're like, oh, this hurts. This is not fun.
Well, and I was reading your book as we were kind of going through some of this, and I actually pulled some stuff out for her. I'm like, I want you to journal about these four questions. You know, what I'm remembering is it was like, what would you do with your time if you weren't doing this sport? Why did you start the sport in the first place? What do you love about it? I mean, it's like letting them think through what they're getting out of it or what's going on internally.
And I will say, sorry, like we talked about earlier, but she could leave it for now. You know, let's hope it plays out the way, but she could leave it for now. And then literally all it takes is 6 months. I mean, that's what's good about the human brain is we kind of, you know, some things happen and we are able to move forward. And her best girlfriend is now wanting to do it. And she says, you know, I'm going to try it again. Right.
Yeah.
So just because she's pivoting away from it now doesn't mean she's going to pivot away from it always.
Yeah.
But we do want it to be on their terms.
Exactly. Well, and guess what she's trying, Kirsten?
What is she trying? Volleyball.
Volleyball.
It's a thing right now.
It is, but I'll tell you what's a challenge. She's 12 and she's never played. It's really hard to find non-club volleyball where she should already be competitive.
And isn't that the saddest thing? I didn't start playing till I was 15.
Wow.
And I played in college. And it wasn't because I was a freak athlete. That's how much it's evolved, right? Like, and I coach 9 and 10 year olds. I'm taking a year off this year, but last year I would have parents come up to me hat in hand saying, I know we're so behind. I'm like, behind what? Well, she's 10 and she has never played. No. And no to your 12 year old being behind. She is not behind. She's going to take everything. All that core strength she's used in gymnastics is going to make her a great server. It's going to make her dive really well on the floor. It's all transferable.
Yeah.
And it's going to make her a better overall athlete. It's going to keep her healthier. It's going to have less burnout. Yes. Yes. All good stuff. Yes. All good stuff.
Well, and you said, and I actually pulled this out because it was so reassuring, many great athletes didn't pick up their main sport until their mid-teens. And I was like, oh, and not that I'm like demanding greatness in any way, but I just want there to be time for new interests to develop. And it doesn't have to be pigeonholed this young. So,
well, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that you don't pick your main sport until late puberty. What is late puberty? Like,
it's all over the map these days.
Yeah. But like 17, 18, 19, right? Like that's of course crazy. We can all laugh at that. Yet it's true. When you look at some of these athletes, you know, and I talk to college coaches all the time where they'll say, they'll look at talent, not based on what they can do with the basketball or the volleyball at that time, but they'll see the athleticism. I can teach you how to spike the ball. I can teach you how to run through the line. I can't teach the thinking laterally, knowing where to move, where to be. And that comes from playing multiple sports.
Yeah. Yes. That is a great point. Okay. So we are close to running out of time. I can't believe it. I wanted to end with a little discussion on values, since we talk a lot about values on our podcast and how to lead a values-based life. And I just want to say that I really see values as front and center of keeping us centered and grounded while parenting our kids playing sports. So like I would ask, why is it important for my child to perform, right, in whatever sport they're doing? And so, for example, for my son, for one thing, and you talk about this in your book, he's very physically small. And you talk about how important that unfortunately can be as they get older. So I really think about what he's getting out of being in competitive soccer. And really, it's building community. It's building his own confidence. It's a great physical outlet, resilience when they lose or he doesn't do as well as he wants, and being really persistent. I mean, there's so much he has gotten out of playing soccer in the last few years. So regardless of what the future holds, there's a lot of values that he's learning from the sport.
Adam Grant's new book, Hidden Potential, he talks about really it's not the prodigies that become the greats most of the time. It's those who learn the characteristics of discipline and grit and work ethic and are willing, growth mindset, and are willing to fail, are willing to learn, are willing to, and sometimes being the late bloomer, being the smallest one, mm-hmm. being the one that's not the starter, those become the craftiest ones mm-hmm. because the ones that are the strongest and the fastest. And I mean, that was my opening story in the book was he was, you know, the starter on the soccer team and the basketball team, ends up getting injured, ends up burning out by high school. All the boys that, you know, passed him way by, but those who had really had to figure out how to get their playing time.
Yeah.
They did it for the right reasons and they stuck with it longer.
Yeah. That was the perfect example of what I loved so much about your book. So Kirsten, thank you so much. I just want to say that parents, caregivers, coaches have so much to get out of reading your book. And youth sports can be such an intense experience that doesn't always bring out the best in us as parents. But I felt like you were my personal coach as I read the book. So thank you for bringing some calm and wisdom to this part of raising children and keeping us all focused on leveraging sports as one way to raise good human beings. Where can people find you to learn more about your work?
Oh, I'm everywhere. on Instagram at Kirsten Jones Coach, on my own podcast, hashtag Raising Athletes with Susie Walton on iTunes and Spotify and wherever you get that, on my website, kirstenjonesinc.com. I've got a Substack, you know, sending out tips and videos and things around the book and around where I'll be speaking. I'm still traveling all over the United States to be speaking. And if you have a team or a school, obviously over Zoom or in person, I love doing that. I love connecting with parents and coaches and most importantly, athletes to help them enjoy, you know, the process and the ride and wherever it's going to take them.
Thank you so much, Kirsten. Hi, listeners. We talked a little bit today about bullying by coaches in youth sports. I wanted to give everyone a resource in case you have a concern about a coach bullying or abusing a youth athlete. If you have a concern, you can file a report at uscenterforsafesport.org. US Center for Safe Sport is dedicated to eliminating bullying and abuse in youth sports.
Thank you for listening to Psychologists Off the Clock. If you enjoy our podcast, you can help us out by leaving a review or contributing on Patreon.
You can get more psychology tips by subscribing to our newsletter and connecting with us on social media.
We'd like to thank our podcast production manager, Chadine Stout-Williams.
This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to be a substitute for mental health treatment. If you're looking for mental health treatment, please visit the resources page of our website, offtheclockpsych.com.